Welcome to the Birds of Alberta podcast. I'm Chris Fisher, co-author of the best-selling field guide Birds of Alberta. Now, Alberta is one of the waterfowl factories in the entire world. Every summer, our sloughs and wetlands serve as an assembly line for ducks and geese to fly off into the skies of the continent and populate the puddles and ponds of our entire hemisphere. Birders, hunters, and metropolis park duck ladies all have Alberta wetlands to thank for their passions. While we have ducks and geese that are well known, loved, and hated elsewhere, there is a duck that Albertans may know better than anyone else as we get them year-round, nesting in the north and overwintering wherever the waters remain open. Even though it doesn't really fit the duck prototype, it quite often is the most common duck out there. And that certainly makes it one of the most interesting birds of Alberta, the common goldeneye. Common goldeneye are pretty widespread across North America. There's about 2.5 million of them, with about half that number nesting in Canada, and a good proportion of that nesting in the northern areas of the prairie provinces. They do tend to nest along ponds and large lakes. But the most critical thing that they're looking for in nesting grounds are trees, because believe it or not, these small rotund ducks actually nest in trees, more precisely in vacated woodpecker cavities, typically northern flicker cavities, that they fly into, even though they appear to have no business being able to fly into and perch on the edge of a woodpecker hole. Well, it's not actually all that uncommon. There are several other species in the province that does that. So for this reason, common goldeneye are pretty restricted in their breeding grounds to forested areas. They will also accept nest boxes that organizations like Ducks Unlimited place on the edge of wetlands as well. Cottage and cabin owners that are lakeside, and particularly northern and western Alberta, would be quite familiar with these small ducks, as they will fly into the forest and mysteriously disappear, and they're disappearing into the trunks of trees. But they're also found in some of our nice urban parks, famously at Horlack Park in Edmonton. There always seems to be a summer population of common goldeneyes about in the pond there. And while goldeneyes have this crazy habit of nesting in very unusual situations, pretty much the rest of their life is water-bound. They are a diving duck, so they prefer to hunt for food well underwater. It's very unusual to spot them walking around on land. Certainly the females will be found on land, particularly when they're leading their nestlings to water. But once they find water, boy, they're pretty restricted to it. In fact, I really have to scratch my head to think if I've ever seen an adult male goldeneye on land ever. And maybe the only time would be when it's lured by seed-feeding, park-friendly people to the edges of the waters of Horlack Park and other city parks that they'll ever dare take a step or two on dry land. So unlike the more commonly seen and associated dabbling ducks that walk just fine on land and can be seen feeding in the lawns of our city parks and in the croplands of our agricultural areas, well, these diving ducks and common goldeneye in particular are pretty much restricted to deep water lakes and rivers and ponds, if available, because they are searching for their food visually, and what they typically are looking for are aquatic invertebrates, little crustaceans like those shrimp-like scuds that we see, snails, the dragonfly, nymphs, and really the myriad of other aquatic invertebrates that make their living in the gravelly bottoms of our lakes and rivers. While diving for their food, their dining antics are pretty amusing to watch, at least what we can see from the surface. They leap up just a little bit to throw themselves down underwater, then of course disappear from sight, and they're down there finding their aquatic invertebrates, and then within 20 or 30 seconds you'll see them pop back up to the surface just like a nice white or brown cork, and they float amongst other golden eyes before they do it all over again. And as they do these repeated dives, you know, I've sat along the shoreline numerous times and I've had pretty nice close looks at them. And when you do have close looks at them, you can look at their telltale eye, which is actually more of an amber color than a golden color. But golden eye is such a great name. Well, in fact, it was the inspiration of a James Bond film by the name of GoldenEye. However, the golden eye in the film wasn't named after the bird, but it was named after a nuclear electromagnetic pulse space-based weapon. But it's still a cool tie-in for us bird nerds, isn't it? But really, when we think of the exceptional behavior of golden eye, we really have to think of their courtship behavior, and particularly the courtship behavior of the males. It really starts off with their large head. Golden eyes and buffalo heads, a close relative, have really, really large heads. And they really serve as a billboard for their sexual facility. They've got that nice big white eye patch, and they fluff out their head to extreme sizes to make them look more impressive than they actually are. Complementing their looks are dance moves that would make the popping and locking of a hip-hop dancer proud. They have been known to do up to 14 different moves with crazy names, like masthead and bowsprit and head tuck and head throw and kick, which is probably the most famous one of all. The head throw kick really sees the male fold itself in half backwards. The back of the head touches the rump, and usually in this acrobatic mastery, letting out a nice little cry to exemplify the incredible move that it's making. Simply said, the courtship displays of male golden eyes are unrivaled by really any other waterfowl in Alberta. Now, what triggers this intense level of competition among males may be that during the late winter and very early spring, the birds tend to be very packed together, as we see them on the open waters of our lakes and rivers and reservoirs at this time of year, or elsewhere as large, large rafts floating around on the coastal ocean. Now, overseeing, and really the reason for this intense level of courtship displays, are female golden eye, who are lovely in their own right. It's a soft chocolate brown plumage that makes up the head and the front of the bird. And really, if you were to describe their response to the majority of this, is resolute annoyance. Because they really know that there's still weeks to go until it's leg-laying season. So the fuss is mostly about male-to-male combat rather than to attracting any of the attention of the hens at this time of year. So really, by the time that it gets into egg-laying season, male golden eyes have really demonstrated an intense level as courtiers. However, that's really where their sense of family ends and their paternal instincts are really, really non-existent. Because after copulation, or as we amusingly refer to it as the quick cloacal kiss, all the nesting and parenting duties falls on the female. So female common golden eye scout out the most appealing vacated woodpecker cavities that are usually located within 1 or 2 kilometers of wetlands or lake shores, and they'll set about laying 5 to 15 eggs that are about the size of a chicken egg. They're smooth and they typically are like a olive green in color, and they will pluck out a little bit of the down from their breast, line it in this rather harshly dug out woodpecker cavity in order to provide a little bit of padding for the eggs and the chicks that will eventually hatch. So after 30 days or so, with the hen coming and going a couple of times a day in order to feed herself, but always being very conscientious about keeping the eggs warm, those eggs will hatch. But of course, the problem is they hatch 10 to 15 meters up a balsam poplar tree, and the female can do nothing but encourage the ducklings to get down on their own, and that serves as one of the most dramatic spring sights that we have in the province of Alberta. I fondly remember working for Albert Carvenan. Now, Albert was a wonderful, prominent filmmaker, wildlife documentary filmmaker, active here in the province of Alberta, and he had a great cabin out at Amisk Lake, not very far from Boyle, and he really wanted to film the emergence of a brood of common golden-eyed ducklings from their nest. And of course, it only happens for a very brief period of time. Albert, being a very well-prepared documentarian, had a nest that he knew on site, not very far from his cabin, and in fact, had a little lipstick camera installed in the nest, so he was able to monitor how the nest was doing. And he assembled a crew of wildlife videographers on the morning that he thought was going to be the D-Day for these ducklings. Sure enough, Albert was absolutely correct. And with three cameras in place, all recording a different exit and entry point of these ducklings, the emergence started to happen. Everyone knew something was up the morning of the exodus because the female, rather than sitting in her nest, was squawking on the ground as if to encourage her ducklings to leave the nest. And as you might imagine, you really need a lot of encouragement, particularly for that first duckling to make the leap. They all hatch more or less within hours of each other, spend a half day or so, or in this case, the night, in the nest cavity. But by morning's light, it's time to leave. So with the mother offering as much encouragement as she can, the ducklings would amass themselves at the exit of the nest site. It took a long, long period of time, as you might imagine, with the ducklings looking out and over the edge before the very first one got enough courage to make the leap. Now, when ducklings are less than a day old, their bones are not fused enough to break upon impact, but you'd swear the ducklings wouldn't know that. But as they jumped out, you know, these are just little cotton balls. They hardly weigh anything at all. Yet they use their little webbed feet as parachutes to brace their fall just a little bit. That doesn't help all that much because as they landed in the soft leaf litter, they would land with a soft crunch and usually bounce once or twice before coming to a full rest and then sprinting over to their waiting mother. So what Albert and his wonderful team captured that morning, in many cases in full slow motion, was the wonderful exit of a common GoldenEye family making their first steps together. And the sequence ended with the female leading her entire brood, including the very last reluctant duckling to make the leap, leaving as a family and waddling off to the nearby lake. And while that scene was the end of the sequence that Albert eventually cut into a film on cavity nesting birds, it's really not the end of the drama for the families of common GoldenEye. You see, these ducklings seem to take a little bit after their fathers when it comes to their family ties. They don't have much trunk for these either. You see, after the ducklings leave the nest, they can pretty much feed themselves on this stage in their life, mostly plant matter, but also some insects that they might find. So they only require protection from the adult females. And some of these females, quite frankly, abandon their brood soon after hatching. But, you know, the young ones will find another female brood. So you end up having some very, very large collections of these little chocolate and white ducklings mixing around. These are often known as creches. And it could also occur if a female loses some of her ducklings and picks up others. So you do have this ragtag assembly of unrelated ducklings that seem to mix together shortly after they all emerge from their cavity nests. So clearly these common goldeneye give us many enjoyable behaviors to observe, but there's a couple that I always keep coming back to. You know, in the wintertime, there are really two common sights along the Bow River here in Calgary during that time of year. We often see fully decked out fly fishermen working the pools for trout. And we also see these flotillas of drifting burly ducks. Now, both of these kind of have similar mindsets. The fly fishers are using wet flies like nymphs, leeches, and buggers in order to catch their trout. And the flotillas of common goldeneye are, of course, feeding on the dragonfly nymphs and caddisfly larvae and midge larvae that are abundant in the gravel at the bottom of the river. And just as the fly fishers drift their lures downstream, so too the ducks drift as they dive downstream as well. The ducks seem to know the richest area of the river, for once that feeding stretch is passed, the flock will collect itself, and then it will fly back upriver with whistling wings accenting the interlude and drawing the attention to many of the riverside walkers there along the Bow River. So I think that in this way and in the showboating ways of the summer nesting season, we in Alberta, like nowhere else, are exposed to the full zany life cycle of the common goldeneye, making it really one of our very own birds of Alberta.